Spring has sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards. Save big money
at Menards. Perhaps you've heard of Andersonburg, the old western Pennsylvanian town that, like Roanoke before it, suffered a mysterious end and left no accounted survivors to enlighten anyone as to the details of its fate. Luckily, that may no longer be the case. I've joined a university-funded expedition here, and have been tasked with collecting items of value that can hopefully assist in our search for knowledge pertaining to the curious fate of the city. After some exhausting work, I did indeed come across a diary that is by far the most informative document yet unearthed. I'll check the contents for veracity at a later date. For now, here are the most relevant excerpts for anyone interested. 3rd of April, 1829. Another man caught the fever, this time down at the lumber mill. From what I heard, the poor bastard was tying down the logs when he just up and fell right over into the river. Almost drowned, I heard. When the others got to him, Matthew and Thomas and the lot, said his face had gone pale as a cloud, that he was shaking, sweating, and coughing. Ain't no mistaking that for nothing but the early signs of the fever. So they hauled the poor fellow out and gave him a canteen and had him rest. Without telling him, they struck camp and left him there. Not sure what came of him, but everyone here knows the mayor's rule. None struck with fever are permitted to return to Andersonburg. If they're favored enough to survive the thing, unlikely as that sounds, they're to remain banished to the woods with nothing but the clothes on their backs and whatever coin they got's in their purse. Not a one of the other lads down at the camp wanted to risk becoming infected and meeting such a grisly fate, no sir. 4th of April, 1829. A mayor's decree, lumber camp is to be abandoned. Along with all the supplies it's gathered, fear of being tainted with fever. There was an uproar at the mansion today over the decision. Many men are out of work now because of it. But strange enough, I didn't see not a one of the fellows from the camp itself down at the mansion. Just other wives and some others. And I know why, too. They wouldn't admit it aloud. No, sir. They don't want to go back. I wouldn't either. I've seen the fever at work at Pinefield. And it ain't got no place in my home. Not while I got a wife at home. No, sir.
7th of April, 1829.
Mar said to me today in the kitchen, "Paul, I can't believe the mayor throws so many good men out of jobs." I said back to her, "No, sweetheart. Perhaps he's got himself a point. The old camp's been run clean over with fever. You don't want that plague finding its way around here. No, sir. God himself couldn't stop it if it did." So she snorts and walks away. She'll come round eventually. Especially when the stories of the infected keep coming. Fever hits the camp. Then it's only a good 2 or 3 miles from town. Only a matter of time, I think, before it finds its way here. God above, I hope I'm wrong. Maybe I should start thinking about taking Maria away for a time, though, to see my brother in Philadelphia. Just so all foul things conclude here.
11th of April, 1829.
Man got shot last night. Not 100 yards from Jim Isley's porch. Jim said he was delirious, just stumbling around near the tree line without a name in the world. He called out to him and says, "Declare yourself. You's an Iroquois? I'll shoot you dead if you an Iroquois, old boy." And he said nothing. So shoot him, he did. Then Jim sent his boy Nathan in town to fetch a picket while he watched the field, thinking engine attack was brewing. When Nathan got back with some of the men and their rifles looking for a good fight, not another Indian showed his face. So they went out and looked at the body and saw it was something worse. That old infected feller from the lumber camp found his way back to town in his stupor. "By God," says the man, "fever worked its way through him right quick. Says he was rolling inside out, skin falling off like a leper.
teeth all filed in those wicked points. So they put their shirts to their noses and mouths, and they set the body to the flame. They told the story today about the pub, but some of the old gents there took offense to the tale. Says they shouldn't have gone near the corpses. One fella, Tom Higgins, I think he was, said those men were probably infected too, by virtue of going near even a dead infected. Says the plague lingers after death. Then he bolts out the door, and the barkeepers ask the storytellers to leave. I left too. Ain't no risking getting the fever. No, sir.
15th of April, 1829.
Jim Isley didn't show up at the office today. And all the men there knowing the story with the infected fellow getting shot, too. So the rumors are swirling. No one's heard from him. His clients are stopping on by, and all we can say is that we ain't seen the fella. Come on by later on. So they do, but they ain't happy about it. No, sir. I like old Jim, even if he's a little small-brained. So I speaks to myself, I think I'll stop on by his porch after closing to see what's the matter. I know I shouldn't, but if he's sick, I'll know for sure. I won't go near the man. I just hope it ain't the fever. God above, I hope it ain't the fever. So I gets to his house at roundabout dusk, and his wife Sarah opens up the door. She's a sweetheart, she is. But even though she put on a nice big smile for her guests, I can tell she's got a worry on her mind. So I put my hat to my chest and says, "Greetings, ma'am. Just stopping on by to extend my regards to Jim. He didn't show up at the office today, you see. I was hoping I could see him." And her smile fades, and she says,
"That's mighty kind of you, Pa. But Jim's been under the weather, and he won't let neither me nor Nathan in the bedroom. All's I know is he's sweating and having trouble keeping down a meal."
Then my smile fades, and I says without a second thought, "Sarah, I'm guessing you heard about the guest a half week back. The man Jim shot." And she says,
"The Iroquois scout. Jim says he shot him dead."
So I says, "Sarah, that weren't no Iroquois scout. That was the infected feller from the lumber camp. Jim and some other fellers burned the body once they saw the skin." And her face got white as a ghost as she just says, "Don't you lie to me about my Jim." And she goes and shuts the door in my face. I hope she gets her wits about her and gets Nathan out of there soon. He's a good old lady. She's got a big, kindly heart herself. They don't deserve this. As luck would have it, though, I ran across the doctor Armstead on the way home. I tells him about Jim. Maybe he can help.
16th of April, 1829.
Maria wakes me up early today, and she says,
"The Isleys are gone. The Isleys are gone."
I'm tired, so at first I don't know what nonsense she's talking. But then I remember Jim and Sarah and Nathan, and I says, "What you mean gone? Dead gone?"
She says, "No, the doctor says Jim got the fever, Pa. And so a few men grabbed their muskets, and they hauled the whole Isley family out of their house and tossed them right out the whole town. Some of the men says if we ever come back, they'll shoot them dead."
So I feels right guilty for riding him out, and I throws my covers off, and I run outside and down the street. Sure enough, the Isley's home gone up in smoke. The whole town's out there watching it burn without a pity, except the parish. And when I run up, I hears people talking about anybody else who'd been in contact with that body or the feller down at the lumber camp. Then I heard the other names come up. David Brody, John Green, Will Benson Hodges. Townsfolk says they've got to find him and give him the boot, or else the whole town will get the fever. One lass says,
"Why don't you just shoot him?"
Another feller says back to her, "Then we'll have to remove the corpses. Wouldn't want to go near such a thing, would you? Plague lingers. Better to have them walk right out on their own 2 feet. But I think to myself, hell, that's almost worse.
18th of April, 1829.
The town's all done over in hysteria, I tell you. The mayor's declared martial law ever since the Isleys and the Brodies and the Greens and Hodges has got evicted. Not a soul is to enter Andersonburg till further notice. You can leave and he won't stop you, but he ain't coming back if you do. The townsfolk will assume your departure means you've been struck with plague, and they'll burn your home to ash. I've seen it happen 10 times in the last few days alone. These boys ain't playing no games, no sir. There's some of them religious folks talking about how it's God's judgment for sin, and other fellas with muskets patrolling the streets, and every once in a while you hear a big old loud crack as he pops off his gun. That's the thing, you see. Them infected keep trying to get back in.
20th of April, 1829.
Some of the infected stormed in down Mulberry Street last night. Stole some cattle, rattled some doorknobs. The militia showed up right quick and drove them off with some sharp musketry. They didn't kill any of them till they run out past the wooden palisades. Then they shoot them in the back and drop them like a sack of potatoes, says they. The men have orders only to wound, if possible, you see, if the infected make it inside the town. That scene is how a dead infected in the streets is a corpse some poor bastard will have to remove. And then he's struck with fever, too. Far as the town's concerned, they send him a packing. Needless to say, not a man, woman, or child in Andersonburg's willing to volunteer for such a job. So the mayor says to the militia captain, he says,
"If them infected find their way in here, you get them out some way other than killing them dead, you hear? I ain't aiming to pick a poor lad to take the bodies out and take himself out in the same way, no sir."
24th of April, 1829.
The mayor let in a visitor today. Some of the townsfolk down at the hall threw up a good fit over that, but the man had something to say, so in he comes. He meets the mayor, and from what I heard from Philly Gables, he told the mayor the infected had thrown in their numbers and overrun the nearest town over west. That place, Leicesterburg, was in a similar spot to us. Rooting out the infected, burning their homes, barricades had gone up, the militia had been mobilized. All the same, the infected, hungry for flesh, swept in out of the woods one night and overran the barricades and the watchtowers and killed every last person in the town. Except for this fella, Charles Gates, or something or other. He was the last man alive. He ran all the way here to tell us that horde is heading up this way, not 2 days out. So now the town's gonna figure out what's to be done. Some people think the fella's lying to get himself a bite to eat. Others think we can take on the horde. Leicesterburg was half the size of Andersonburg, after all, says they. We have more men, more muskets. We could beat him. But it's all up to the mayor now.
25th of April, 1829.
The mayor elected to stand and fight, but said that anyone who sought to flee was welcome to do so, of course. Got himself a nice round of applause. Then the men, myself among them, set about collecting arms and bullets and building up the barricades in the streets and setting up wood towers for the lookouts. These infected aim to have a fight. A fight they shall have. According to Charles, we should expect the horde to come up from the southwest near the pike, sometime in the next 12 or so hours. Said there were unaccountable hundreds of them, all rotting away and thirsty for blood and crawling like beasts. We got ourselves a good 240 men, and muskets and rounds enough for maybe 180 of them. Add to that number 30 good sharpshooting rifles for the marksmen in the towers. And even 2 12-pounders overlooking the pike from 2 angles. We got ourselves a fine force to defend the town with. But I can see it in everyone's eyes. A mist of fear. Tonight I'll spend the evening with Mariah. And we'll do what the two of us can to take our mind off things. By the door is my musket, of course. And in my satchel all the ammunition I can find. Should I hear the church bells go off at any point, I'll have no choice but to grab the gun. Kiss Mariah one last time, perhaps, and rush out to Southwest Barricade to do some fighting. If the church bells ring a second time, though, everyone knows what that means. The infected have broken on through. Then it's time to hit the road to Philadelphia. So I tells Mariah to keep our valuables packed.
26th of April, 1829.
Today I took a good stroll out of the edge of town. We got ourselves a good palisade. Some of the boys at the northwestern edge even dug themselves a trench. In the hole, the militia, even Captain Gaines, have elected old Booker Downs to lead the defense, seeing as he fought with the Mountaineers in the Indian Wars and got himself some experience.
So he rounds up some horses and dispatches a rider to Philadelphia to call up some help. And then two more riders with orders to scout the outskirts of town. One to the west to spot the horde, and the other elsewhere to ensure they ain't coming up from nowhere else. And report back what they find no later than mid-afternoon. So off they all go, and the rest of the lads get back to the job of fixing up defenses. By now, we scourged up a good 12 more muskets and 40 or so pistols and every blade we can find. The butcher was kind enough to lend us some cutlery, and in the town armory, Briggs and I bagged up a few score rusty bayonets and distributed them evenly along the front. We got ourselves an army now, boys. I only hope it lasts the night. Still no word from the scouts. Downs is getting nervous, so he goes and sends off another two riders and says, "You lads go no more than a mile out, you hear? Then come on back to me." So off they go. One of the new scouts came a-galloping back in. He's huffing and puffing, he says to Dawes, "They ain't just coming from the west, sir. They spotted a good lot of them in the northwest, too, and the north. And they got themselves horses. A whole mess of them." And Downs says, "What do you mean, horses? Like they's eating them?" And the scout says, "No, sir. They's riding them. Like cavalry. Dead-looking things, rotten skin with the same red eyes as these infected folk. And they making speed, sir. They making damn good speed." And no sooner does he say that than the church bell rings. And I look up, and all the men look up. Here we see young Johnny Billings up there, and he's waving his arms and shouting something fierce and pointing out to the west. So he looks to the west. And there they are. All of a sudden, a whole mess of them infected coming out of the tree line and running up the hill towards the barricade. So we all rush up to the wall and take aim. And Downs says to fire the 12-pounders. And a good few of those infected go a-flying. But then more are coming. And more and more. So then the marksmen open up fire from the towers, and they're picking the bastards off as best they can. The horde's getting closer and closer. So they's in musket range, so me and the boys fire a volley. And when we reload, the boys behind us fire. Then the boys behind them. We three lines deep at the choke points. And pretty soon we get infected piling up right quick, not 50 yards off. Dead and more dead and more. The rest of them keep right on climbing over the pile of the dead ones and keep right on coming. And we keep right on shooting. Then the infected did something I ain't seen yet. Far as I could tell beforehand, the fever keeps you from thinking straight. Then you're just not thinking at all. You're just a mindless thing with rotten skin that eats and kills. But today, after a good 10 or 12 minutes of fighting, the horde got up and a whole lot of them actually fell back. Now, that says to me a number of things. Things discussed openly as the men set about reloading and fetching water. That means these things are thinking. They knew they couldn't break our lines, and so they retreated back to the tree line. They ain't done. We could see their damned red eyes glowing through the shroud of the trees, but they fell back. Maybe they's scared. The infected haven't tried another all-out assault yet. Commander Downs thinks they's waiting for nightfall so they can slip in unseen. So we had a handful of boys from each of these regiments head out to the killing fields and throw up lamps while some others stood guard. When sunlight starts to fall, we'll have other boys running out with torches and light those lamps. And the hope is we can keep the fields lit for shooting throughout the night. We got closer lamps, too, that can be lit from behind the barricade without having to send men out all exposed. Sun's coming on down. We can still see them damn infected in the trees. And we heard rustling and footsteps, and Commander Downs says they's likely to be bringing up reinforcements for another push. Billy's got a fine ear, and he says he can even hear him talking out there. Grunting and stuff. Probably planning their next move. Meanwhile, the boys on this side of the Palisades have been reinforcing the barriers. Still no word from the other three scouts, but we ain't holding our breath on their return. Round about 8 o'clock, we heard some shooting at the northwest barrier. So Commander Downs sends me and Butler and Peyton out there to see if they need help. So we get there,
and the boys said the things had tried crawling through the tall grass for cover, and were only about 100-some-odd feet from the palisades when the boys spotted them and started shooting. So he goes back to Dawes and tells him, and calls up a council of war with the regiment heads and says that, given that and the retreat from earlier, it's clear the infected are smarter than we thought. Made a point to say that no weapons could fall into their hands, not under any circumstances. No, sir. No, we all still waiting on that big nighttime push. Sure enough as hell, those infected bastards made a second big charge against all the barricades at the same time, sometime before midnight. Damn near caught us with our pants round our ankles, too. We heard rifle cracks from the marksman towers, and then the 12-pounders firing off, and then a flurry of musket fire from the northwest. Then they hit us twice as hard as they did before, and we're firing volley after volley into them, stacked up three lines deep to keep the musket balls flying. And they're hitting the dirt, and bits and pieces of them are flying. Still, they keep on coming. Then they start hitting back, even though there's still a good 50 yards to the palisades. They bring up rocks and start flinging them towards us, fistfuls of gravel flying in through the musket smoke. And they peppering the boys and knocking teeth loose. Men start to yelp when they get hit, and then 12-pounders are firing away too, every couple of minutes. And that tears a big group of them down. But they kept on coming till they was right up at the palisade, and Commander Downs told the front row to start up with their bayonets and blades and tomahawks. I remember how close the bastards came to taking a big old bite out of my neck. Luckily, old Bruce nicked the sumbitch with bayonet to the head, and he keeled over. Not long after that, the infected retreated again. Now we got a fresh problem. We got casualties. Men are bit. Men made contact with plague. So now we got to do what we all knew we'd had to do. Get rid of the infected. Commander Downs rides up and he takes a good long look at this one poor lad, arm bleeding from a bite, and he tells him to head out and relight the torches. The boy looked all forlorn, like he knew what was happening, but he weren't about to disobey orders. So out he goes, and as soon as he lights the torch, Downs has one of the men open fire on the poor lad. He dropped like a stone, dead before he hit the ground. That one hurt us all, I think. But we wasn't done, neither. Some of the other men got touched by fever, too. And so me and the rest of the boys backed up and leveled some pistols at him, and we asked Commander Downs, "What do we do with them, sir?" And he says, "You know what we do. We send them away." So at gunpoint, we show the men to the gate. They're begging and they're pleading. We got no choice. So out they go, and we say we'll fire at them unless they get as far away from town as they can. We all knew what was coming. And sure enough, as soon as they got near the woods, infected ran out and dragged them in. We all watched till the screaming stopped and the bushes quit their shaking. A few of the men here got sick. Others cried. I just wrote it all down. God above, I hope Mariah is as far from this hell as possible.
27th of April, 1829.
We slept in shifts last night, and luckily there weren't any other attempts by the infected to rush the barricades. But we're tired, the lot of us. Damn hell, we're tired. It'd be amazing if any man got a lick of real rest. We was silent, but we stayed up and we listened good to the sound of infected howling out there in the woods. There were thousands of them, sounded like, filling up the whole night sky with the din of their big collective war scream. Lasted for an hour, maybe more. One of the boys nearest me was praying along all night, begging for the good Lord to come down and save us. I asked him to put in a good word for me, too. This morning, some of the wives pitched in with medical aid and a big, hearty breakfast. So we ate well, and Commander Downs allowed us to spend time with our families. Mariah and I took a nice stroll, but I didn't have much to say. By midday, I was back at the palisades with the other men. By sundown, we were starting to hear the infected getting riled up again, hearing that awful howling. Downs at his sides were riding back and forth, making sure the walls were good and solid. cannons reloaded and manned, and the bell tower watch was keeping his eye out. And this time we got some of the younger boys to run ammo up and down where it's needed. Shooting started. We'll update if possible.
God above. God help us.
The infected hit us at all sides, all at once. Them cannons were fired like mad. Commander Downs was telling them, aim for the trees. Aim for the trees. So they did. After a few rounds, they managed to dam off the entry points and slow down the horde, but they weren't more than a stopgap. Them infected were running through the musket smoke, howling and screaming for food. Some of them were galloping towards the walls on all fours, and you could see the red of their eyes, like pooling blood. Jim Isley was one of them, and I had to be the poor bastard to put him down for good. I'm sorry, Jim. Truly, I am. But they kept right on coming. The boys were firing wildly and chopping and stabbing and screaming. And them infected were doing the same and trying to mount the palisades. And then, just when there weren't a lick more we could take, we heard some of the men screaming from down south of us. We wasn't aware we were even threatened there, but sure enough, them infected bastards had broken on through some of the pickets and were trying to break into the windows of the houses. So Commander Downs sent me and five other gents to go and put a stop to that. We burst into the houses and stabbed them through the windows and traded shots for rocks over barrels. I got all good and cut up from the exploding glass window, but I ain't been bit. Not yet. So we put a stop to them coming in that way. But when I got back, I explained to Downs real good that they were going to try that again, sooner or later. And we need a good force of men to guard up there. Turns out he'd gotten similar reports from other parts of town, though. And so we'd had to stretch our lines real thin to cover it all up. But we did what we had to. And by God, we held the line all around the town by the skin of our teeth. Some of the men, God above, grown men, they're just crying. They're so damn tired and scared. We all are. But we held the line. By God, we did. And a man here who didn't do his duty.
28th and 29th of April, 1829.
Today, the women and children helped us all build a new defense line towards the center of town. Down says that if we get hit again like we did last night, we'd have those new palisades and trenches to fall back on. I worked with Maria today, digging away. She tended to my wounds, too, and we just enjoyed each other's company, and we worked. I even got some shut-eye, some real good shut-eye, if not but for an hour or two. Then it was sundown again. The boys and I ate up a stew the women cooked up, and then we were off to the palisades. Them wooden posts were beaten and worn, too. We knew we couldn't stay for long. As soon as the howling started from the trees, Commander Downs ordered the 12-pounders to be stripped and rushed to the inner line of defense so they'd be ready if it gets bad. Or when it gets bad, I suppose I'll say. I made sure to kiss Mariah real good tonight, and made her promise to make a good run for it if those church bells rang twice, which now meant the inner line had been breached. She cried and nodded. I wanted to tell her that if she had to run, I'd meet her at Joseph's house in Philadelphia. But all I could bring myself to say aloud was, you run straight for Joseph's. You hear? Don't you stop. Because, Lord, and I'm tearing up just writing this down, I don't know if I'll last the night. Hell, I don't know if anyone here will last the night. We at the inner line of defense now. We ain't been hit that hard since the battle started. Oh, God above. It was a bloody mess. The rush started off with some infected leaping out of them woods and tackling the lamps into the ground. Glass broke and all the dry weeds going aflame. Soon, the fire smoke and the musket smoke made it so we couldn't see a damn thing out there. All we could hear were the howling. Must have been 1,000 of them bastards tonight, maybe more. So we'd been shooting for a good while and hacking and throwing rocks, and then we'd heard the commotion up at the other wall. And boy, we knew we weren't no small thing. There were men screaming, and the shooting all together stopped up there. So we knew they were done for. And Commander Downs rides up to us and says, Northwest Palisades breached. Fall back to the inner line. Fall back. And so me and the boys picked up our guns and beat a fighting retreat down the boulevard towards the inner walls. Then them infected started pouring over the Palisades, and we knew there weren't no throwing them back. Not this time. So we gets back to the inner Palisades, and we starts right up again, shooting and firing those 12-pounders. Boy, and them infected are coming at us from every side now, howling the whole way, burning up and getting shot all up, but still running at us. Now we got kids in the camp, and I can hear the little lads and lasses putting up a good cry, even over the din of the fight. I thinks, how's it we ain't sent them little ones off to Philadelphia? How's they still here? Maybe it's because Downs thinks their being here will inspire us. You know, fight harder. Anyways, after about a good more hour or two of shooting and stabbing, the horror dwindles a bit. And that's when Briggs sees it. One of them infected mounted up on a dead horse, looking down on the town from atop the wooded hill north of town. We only saw his silhouette and those red eyes peering at us through all the smoke and flame. But he's there. Right as rain. Briggs points, and we all look. And we gotta catch our breath in our throats. Them infected got themselves a general, from the looks of it. He just sitting up there, watching his plague runners set the town ablaze. Not too long after that, some sunlight comes up with a church tower. Then the horde falls back. But we don't know how far. We don't know if they's ran back to the trees, or if they's still inside the town. Staying in our houses till dark. Down says we can't spare nobody to go and take a look. So here we stay. Here in the inner Palisades by the edge of town. And we waits for nightfall. And that infected up on the horse.
29th of April, 1829.
So I got some sleep this afternoon. Not a whole hell of a lot, but a better amount than none. First thing I did when I woke was help count ammo. Was almost clean out, maybe 10 rounds a man. And now we's only got 7 men or so. And them 12-pounders is almost out, too. They only has maybe 12 balls left to shoot between the two of them. And none of the riders have gotten back, neither. So we ain't got no reinforcements coming. So Briggs and I, and Peyton and Short, we goes up to Commander Downs and we says, Sir, we almost out of men. And ammo. And we got little ones here, sir. And our wives. And the town's all up in flames, sir. There ain't nothing left for us here. Not for a one of us. We should make a run for Philadelphia while we still got daylight. But he says back, I ain't never left the enemy in command of the battlefield. We stay and we fight. And he rides off. Now, I ain't no mutineer. That Lord above knows I done my duty. But I ain't aiming to die for the principle of it. Not when I got my Mariah here and no town left to defend. So I talks to some of the men and women and lay it out for them. And I says, look here, boys. We ain't lasted another night. And if we do, what'll come of us in the next one? We got to get out while we still can. The road to Philadelphia is still open. And we still got ourselves enough daylight to get out of the woods and to the open road before nightfall. And the majority of them nod, and we take a vote. The motion to leave is the clear winner. So we gets our things, and we tells Commander Downs, we's leaving, sir. There ain't nothing here left for us, and we ain't aiming to die for a pile of rubble. And he gets red in the face and says back, I'll have the lot of you hanged for treason. And he calls up his boys, about half of the men left with their muskets, and says, you lot arrest them mutineers, you hear? So they advance, and we level our muskets to repel them back. But before any shots are fired, one of the women in the church points down the road heading off to the southeast, and she says,
look, one of them scouts is riding in.
So we all turns and looks, and sure enough, old David Benjamin's pulling up into town, and he looks like hell itself. He says, water, water. And so we gives him a canteen, and then he says, I was coming up with a column of state militia from the Midlands. All's the help I can muster up. But them infected, they're everywhere. All over the roads, out in force. I swears they was lying in wait for the lot of us, like an ambush. And they leapt down on the main road and just tore into the poor lads. They didn't even have a chance. I'm the only man who made it back. I needs to tell y'all that the road to Philadelphia is blocked. So now the whole damn town's in a panic. We surrounded by the plague, and there ain't no way out. And not a minute ago, while I was writing this here entry, someone points up to the hill north of town, and they says, "There's the horseman." And we all look, and there he is, that plague rider. I in the town with that wicked red stare of his, and that of his horse. And we sees he's got a whole wretched host of other infected riders. And then they started moving right on down the mountain towards us. Then the howling starts. And just now, the church bells started to ring. I know it in my bones I ain't surviving this night. They coming at us from all sides now. And I'm holding Mariah tight. And she's crying, too. And all we can hear are the wails of the little ones from the church. And the shouts of the boys as they run up to the palisade with their guns. And the wheeling forward of the cannon. So I gave Mariah a kiss, and I'm leaving this here diary in her possession. I love you, darling. I love you, and I hope you know that.
29th of April, 1829.
Paul has gone off to the Palisades. He's scared. I am too. We all are. But we've got to be strong for the children here in the back of the church. The other women and I have tended to the lot of them since the men fell back to the inner line of defense, which I helped build, and at least half of them have the fever. Of that, I'm now sure. But it no longer matters, does it? They won't live to see themselves be taken by it, and perhaps that's a merciful thing. The shooting has started. The boys are throwing in everything they've got. God bless the lot of them. But I can tell it's not enough. We've but an hour left, maybe less, before the infected make it to the church. The children here have cried themselves empty, and now they're huddled around myself and the other women and clutching our dresses and burying their faces in our laps. I'm as afraid as any of them, but I can't let them see that. I can't. The church bells are ringing again, and the men just outside, the 30 or so of them, left. I've no idea if Paul is among them. They sound exhausted and panicked. The cannons have long since stopped firing, likely having expended their ammunition. Only periodically do I hear a musket blast. Paul was explaining earlier that they'd nearly run out of bullets last night. I can't imagine they've found many more. I hear galloping now, coming up from the west. It's not the state militia. It's the plague rider. I can hear him. I know it's him. I know it. He commands these beasts. He grunts and shouts, and they listen. They're only a few yards from the church doors. We've hidden the children in the very furthest corner and covered them up with whatever we could find. We told them to stay quiet at all costs. But some of them are infants. They'll cry for their mothers. And when they do, the whole lot of them will be found. It's been several minutes since I heard musket fire, and the last of the shouts from our boys have long since ceased. All I can hear now is the howling, and some of the women in here saying how we should use the pews to barricade the door. But it's hopeless. We all know it's hopeless. All we can do now is be strong for the children. But how can I? My home is burnt. My Paul is gone. All our boys are gone. How can I be strong when my strength is gone? The infected have begun hammering away at the church doors and windows. We are surrounded in here. Good Lord, give me strength. Please, Father, give me strength. Just for a little while longer. Just for a little.
This diary was found buried in the rubble of an old church in the center of Andersonburg, cradled by a long-rotted corpse that appeared to have suffered severe blunt trauma wounds along the length of the spine and around the skull. There are multiple other skeletons strewn about the floor of the place, all but one of which appeared to have suffered similarly. The other one, an infant's corpse, and one well hidden in the corner, appeared to never have suffered a wound at all. It looks instead to have perished of starvation, likely some days after the events described here. Outside the church, of course, is the town itself. It is currently being picked clean by my colleagues and other members of the university. All for research purposes, of course. Although I fear black market scavengers will descend like vultures upon the place once word of its existence spreads. And it is in a spectacular state of ruin, mostly from what appears to be fire damage. As of this document, I am the only person who knows of the existence of this diary. Anyway, hell, I'll update this later. At the moment, I'm being called over to help with one of the interns who's apparently collapsed and begun to convulse. They're probably just dehydrated.